happy day.
Oh, happy day.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
Oh, when he wore.
Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
When Jesus wore.
He washed my sins away.
Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, we're going to learn from my guest, Dr. Joel Fuhrman, in the second part of our program, and about how we can live a longer life. Overcome illnesses of all types by having more raw living and vegan selections into our diet. Dr. Fuhrman is a board-certified family physician practicing in Flemington, New Jersey, and he will give us his insights on this topic. Also today, I mentioned recently how 20 is the new 35. 35 is the new 50, if you're not living right. Well, new research on this, talking about younger kids, children, they're on track for a heart attack. How's that possible? Also, better check your vitamin D levels. If they're too low, you could be susceptible to pneumonia. Do you ever wonder what's in lipstick? Lots of toxic metals you don't want. I'll share that with you. And they've come up with some new research where they claim they can determine where the anti-aging system in the brain is. So we'll look at that. From our public health segment today, your tax dollars are buying 400,000 tons of sugar just so that the people growing it or a strong political campaign people to both Democrats and Republicans, they can keep their profits high. And of course, these are the sugars that cause disease, but we're paying for it. Also, the labeling of GMOs, I'll go into that in more depth today and what we should be doing to help support that legislation. And if time permits, you are a guinea pig, how Americans became exposed to biohazards in the greatest uncontrolled experiment ever launched, by David Rossner and Gerald Markowitz of Tom Dispatch. From our issues today, I'm going to share insights about how we become obsessed and phobic and really stupid when it comes to overemphasizing the danger to our lives from terrorist attacks. So there's the statistical analysis. Good scholarship. Putting it in perspective. What are you more likely to die from? Be injured from? A terrorist attack? And we're going to even make it more than the United States, any American anywhere in the world. I'll give you that insight information. Also today, from our environmental segment, we're going to look at the bee population. And there's also from fracking, they're finding radioactive material from fracking sites that are so radioactive, they can't even be put into a normal dump site. So we have a lot to share. Let's begin. For those of you who grew up where your mother's breastfed, where there was an emphasis during her pregnancy upon eating healthy food and organic and juicing, meditating and exercise and yoga, you're healthier today because of that. I'm also sure that many people in this audience to this day even spend a quality meal together with family, no cell phones allowed, where you communicate with each other. You enjoy each other's presence and energy. And then there are those that they didn't have that benefit. They ate anything they wanted. Frequently when they got home, the only food they could eat at home was food that was picked up like a pizza or macaroni and cheese or something that could be quickly put into an oven, you know, a microwave and heated up. But when you're growing up, you don't pay a lot of attention as long as you have some energy and the body is still going through a very rapid cell development. And so we assume that everything's all right. It isn't. Two generations, the millennial generation and the X generation, are suffering prematurely aged bodies. The college binge drinking, the drugs, the fast foods, the stress, all have taken a really strong toll. Interesting that those who are the baby boomers and senior citizens who've been living healthy lives, making healthy choices, are much healthier, much better shape than people half their age. This is the latest in our concerns. This is looking at 9-year-olds. Quote, a new measure finds hardening of the arteries can start young in 9-year-olds. This is from Juan Winslow, and here's what it says. Do you know how old your kids' arteries are? It's a potentially important question as scientists increasingly uncover links between healthy habits in childhood, unhealthy habits in childhood, and the risk of heart disease later in life. And there are growing concerns about the cardiovascular health of millions of children in the United States who are overweight or obese. A new study suggests there is a simple way to assess a child's arterial health with a calculation based upon an often overlooked component of cholesterol, triglycerides. The calculation is the ratio of triglycerides to HDL, or the good cholesterol. It can be easily determined from a standard cholesterol blood test. In the study, based upon 900 children, researchers at Cincinnati's Children's Hospital Medical Center found that the higher the ratio, the greater likelihood a child would have stiff and hence damaged arteries. Quote, we are demonstrating vascular changes in supposedly healthy adolescents, said the head of prevention cardiology at Cincinnati Children, lead author. Stiff vessels make your heart work harder. It is not good for you. It is published in the current Journal of Pediatrics. Now, the problem is also called hardening of the arteries. In adults, we'll call it arterial sclerosis. And it also comes with elevated blood pressure, elevated cholesterol, and assaults on the walls of the blood vessels over decades. And it's quite simply, you're at greater risk of sudden death, heart attack, or stroke. So now, let's get this really focused for a moment. We have lots of proof now that we are seeing, quote, accelerated aging in 9-year-olds. Accelerated aging, end quote. That's what they actually state here. Well, look at your sugary beverages, your high protein, carbohydrate, heavily emphasized processed foods, your junk foods, and that shows you the power of toxic biochemistry to play havoc with your body's biochemistry. You've heard me mention many times we're really three ages. We are our chronological age, 40, 50, 60, 70. We are the biological age, which is what causes us to have a quality of life as we age. And that's dependent upon how many things we're doing good collectively and how many we're doing wrong. Because both manifest in accumulation. So if you have one soda, just one 12-ounce glass of a soft drink every day, you have cut years off your life. You've taxed your pancreas, your heart, your digestive system. You've changed the pH in your body, which means you're not going to get the same quality digestion or nutrient absorption. All that comes from premature aging of just one item. But most people don't have just one bad item. They have many bad items. In fact, some people, all they do is bad items, and they have large followings. If you've watched the moronic show Duck Dynasty, and someone says, you can't believe what they're doing. So I tuned on last night. We were editing, and I always have television ready so I can see what's being done, where. And here are these people who probably at some point were genetically related to ducks. And it's as if I can just hear the producer saying, our audience is rednecks or people who want to be rednecks, but are afraid to acknowledge their real biases, prejudice, and stupidity. So you got to reach out to them. So in this scene, you're going to go into this diner and you're going to bet each other how many donuts you can eat. And so the old man in the group, he eats, I think, 36 donuts. And the least donuts, I think, was 26. So, and then the rest of them are kind of sick, but he says, now I can go back and eat some funky squirrel that is a couple weeks old. In any case, the whole show is about showing moronic behavior in people who are, in this case, successful. They have a successful business. I'm sitting there, and I just did the calculations. So how many calories are in 36 donuts? And what type of chemicals are manufactured when you deep fry a donut? Well, it's all trans fats, and it's simple carbohydrates, and it's going to throw that blood sugar right up through the roof, and it's over 4,000 calories in one simple meal. But no one talks about that. It's all about the bravado of, I can do more than you can. And then you start looking at all these man versus food show and this fellow that runs around eating the most bizarre parts of unusual animals. But no one's talking about the consequences. Wouldn't it be interesting if when they're doing this man versus food and you've got all these people rooting him on, like this is a real athletic event, 6 pounds of meat and cheese, and against his will, can he do it? Wouldn't it be interesting if simultaneously to him doing each bite, the entire biochemical reaction in the body on the urea, the ammonium from the protein, the heterocyclic amines from the way that it's cooked, the dairy allergies kicking in, the amount of mucus being produced, the change in the pH, the extension into the abdomen of the stomach itself, the destruction of good bacteria and proliferation of bad bacteria, the massive engorgement of this amount of food into the intestine, the bile rushing, the gallbladder rushing bile in to slow down digestion, and then how all this raises a person's blood pressure. Wouldn't it be interesting if they put a blood pressure cup on him while he was doing this and marked his stress hormone simultaneously? And what would be amazing is how close to death he comes with every one of those meals. The next time you watch one of these commercials on television for kids, and what they should be eating and drinking, how it makes them more popular, and how all the other kids are doing it, and just remember, their arteries are hardening. We are accelerating their aging at 9 years of age. So you know what's going to happen. You know where this is going. Those kids, most of them are not going to make it to 40. They will die of a heart attack or stroke. We are in that very unique time where parents, you're going to outlive your kids. You'll be bearing your children. Or on the Duck Dynasty, you know, they'll just stuff them, put them in a half-human, half-duck museum someplace. It's all so stupid, isn't it? Back in a moment. Don't you hate- welcome all of you. And by the way, there are lots of different ways you can listen live to this program or download it at your convenience. And you can go to iTunes.com, Podbean.com, Stitcher.com, TuneIn.com, and Autoport.com. Those are some of the places. And of course, you can listen over the telephone anywhere. I just got the latest numbers of how many tens of thousands of people are listening over the telephone. 619-550-0869. 619-550-0869. This is from our public health segment. It deals with where our tax dollars go. This is from the Alliance for Natural Health, and I'll quote this. Welcome to the government sugar industrial drug complex. Sugar in all of its forms is considered the primary cause of type 2 diabetes. It also suppresses the immune system, is linked to cancer, and leads to cognitive problems. Government subsidies, taking a great variety of forms, are increasing rather than decreasing. Diabetes drug sales are now $35 billion. But there's a connection. The U.S. is the world's largest sugar producer. We produce an average of 8.1 million tons of granulated sugar every year. And since the mid-1990s, sugarcane has accounted for 45% of the sugar produced domestically, with sugar beets providing 55%. And now we have genetically engineered varieties accounting about 95% of sugar beets. High fructose corn syrup is derived from the milling of corn. Production of high fructose corn syrup increased from 2.2 million tons in the 1980s to 9.2 million tons now. In general, deliveries of sugar and other sweeteners average about 21 million tons. The U.S. Department of Agriculture makes loans every year to processors of domestically grown sugarcane and sugar beets as part of the 2008 Sugar Act. High fructose corn syrup processors, on the other hand, benefit from corn subsidies. Last October, sugar processors, both beet and sugarcane, borrowed $862 million under the price support program, loans secured by 4 billion pounds of sugar that companies expect to produce from the current harvest. The loans did little to keep sugar prices high. However, they have fallen 18% since October. And one reason may be that the elevated price of raw sugar and sugar beets enables high fructose corn syrup producers to undercut sugar producers with their cheaper product, thus making the sugar worth less. Sugar processors are afraid they'll have to default on their loans, which could result in $80 million in losses to the USDA's price support system. And keeping sugar prices up, of course, means that consumers spend more. And so that's where they end, through their Sweetener Users Association, they end up lobbying and get laws passed, so they're subsidized. So when you're paying higher prices for sugar, it's all backed by our tax dollars. No one is looking at the human cost to children, adults, animals with all this high fructose corn syrup. But since the right and since the Sean Hannitys are so concerned about welfare reform, and since Rush Limbaugh, who probably consumes about 700 million pounds of sugar each year from the looks of him, I don't think any of it is ever vacated, he's so full of it, that maybe they should also be against welfare for corporations. I'm for that. So let's take away all support for the sugar industry and let the price of sugar drop so they can't make a profit. Let's also take away all subsidies for coal, nuclear, oil, and gas hydrofracking. Let's take away all subsidies for Big Agra. And let's also make sure that any more, that part of the cost of every item that Big Agra manufactures must include the upkeep of our roads and all the other services that we, the people, provide them. that they don't have to pay for. But if you're a small organic farmer, you don't get any subsidies. You have to pay for everything. You're talking about over $500 billion a year in corporate welfare. And of course, we shouldn't allow any of the banks to get any more money. We should deconstruct every single one of these major institutions. Now, that said, I also believe that we should be supporting at the state level initiatives to label genetically engineered food, and also at the national level. There is now a bill in the House and in the Senate, sponsored by Barbara Boxer from California and Peter DeFazio from Oregon. They have 9 co-sponsors in the Senate, 22 in the House. And this would require food manufacturers to clearly label any product that has been genetically engineered or contains genetically engineered ingredients, or else the product would be classified as misbranded by the FDA. I think this is very important. This is the first labeling bill that has both bipartisan support and it also has a co-sponsor in each chamber. And I think that's important. The new labeling requirement does not apply to food used in restaurants or in hospitals or medical environments, nor does it apply to food produced using a genetically engineered vaccine or a processed aid, such as yeast. But also, it's for all the other food. It would be for all your soybeans and corn and cereals and products made from that, and dairy. So my suggestion is this, that you should reach out to your legislators today and let them know that you support the genetically engineered labeling law. And also, there's 65 bills concerning genetically modified organisms at the state level, and that's just this year. And the majority of them are labeling. None so far has been enacted into law. 13 of them have been defeated. A few have some positive momentum. In Alaska, they already have a law requiring labeling of GMO shellfish and fish. And the legislature just a week ago unanimously approved Resolution HJR-5, opposing a petition by Aqua Bounty Technologies to commercialize GM salmon. In Connecticut, you have 2 GMO labeling bills, HB 6519 and HB 6527. They pass out of committee by an overwhelming majority. Well, you only have till June 5th to get the full legislature to pass them. And you should put a lot of pressure on your governor, because the governor is clearly on the side of the major GMO manufacturers. He is not on the side of the citizens of Connecticut. In Maine, LD 718 has more than 120 bipartisan co-sponsors. Maine's legislative session ends on June 13th. For Maine, let them know you want this passed. In Vermont, H112 has over 50 sponsors and the support of Governor Shumlin, despite opposing the bill last year after Monsanto threatened to sue the state if GMO labeling bill passed. The bill already has passed the House Ag Committee. In Washington, after an extensive grassroots campaign, ballot initiative I-522 was able to gather 353,000 valid signatures. The initiative will go on the ballot November 13th. And my suggestion is, for those of you who know anyone in the state of Washington, or if you are listening from the state of Washington, we have the most definitive articles on the dangers and the bad science and the corruption around GMOs. And we watch carefully how they defeated our efforts, we the public's efforts, to label food if it's genetic engineered in California. They spent $55 million. Well, we took every one of their lies, and we've now responded to it. So you can do the same. So when they start lying again, you can have a response. Also, Seeds of Death, you should watch. And let's get it on all television that is public access or a PBS station. And by the way, the Seeds of Death was shown on PBS in Colorado, and according to the program director of that special, Sherry Bernstein, quote, "We rate shows from 0 to 5. For the first time in the station's history, your program rated 5++. It played late at night, and yet it outperformed every other national PBS program that we aired. We have played it 7 times. It has been number 1 the entire drive each time. We'll continue to play it. So use the program. Get it up on your public television stations. So contact your legislatures. Let them know you support the labeling of GMOs." And before we take our break, I'm concerned that we are becoming a police state on so many levels. This is just the latest. This is from Jeffrey John, and it says, "Police state registry system being set up to track your vaccination status." Quote, from VacTruth, "The Centers for Disease Control has been quietly rolling out a nationwide program called the Immunization Information Systems, registering your vaccine information into a database. This effort has been run in parallel with state vaccine registry implementations. What is the initiative of such intention of such programs? My colleague, Leslie Mankuyan, writer and director of the movie The Greater Good, wrote in a recent article, quote, "The CDC has openly stated that vaccine registers are a tool to identify areas of under-vaccinated so that they can be addressed and brought into compliance." I would also add to Leslie's statement that since the government purchased a large bulk of the vaccines, it is in their financial interest to make sure vaccines are consumed regularly. "If you exempt your child from being vaccinated, your refusal is also being tracked and put into the database. If you want to know why, this is a big deal. I'll deal with it on an upcoming program." So now if you challenge vaccines, no matter what your legitimate and legal right to do so, they've got you on a register. How about that? And that's how they play. Now, one other thing that concerns me is that we have been told time and again that we have to give up our freedoms. We have to give all of our money, without question, to the military-industrial complex, no matter how asinine the procurements, no matter how fraught with fraud and self-dealing the munitions that they build, the airplanes. You won't hear anyone say a negative word about it, especially in conservative media. And we haven't had national demonstrations in front of the Pentagon or the Defense Department at the Pentagon or the White House about how much money we are spending on military procurements, our military industrial complex. And it has nothing to do with defense. It has to do with continuing to be self-interested. Here is the latest. You are 17,600 times more likely to die of a heart attack than from a terrorist attack. That's times, by the way. You're 12,571 times more likely to die from cancer than a terrorist attack. 11,000 times more likely to die in an airplane accident than from a terrorist plot involving an airplane. 1,048 times more likely to die from a car accident than from a terrorist attack. You're 404 times more likely to die in a fall than from a terrorist attack. 87 times more likely to drown than die in a terrorist attack. 13 times more likely to die in a railway accident than a terrorist attack. 12 times more likely to die from accidentally suffocating in bed than a terrorist attack. 9 times, that's 900%, more likely to choke to death on your own vomit than die in a terrorist attack. 800% more likely to be killed by a police officer. Well, that's wrong. I got in Detroit. I would exclude. And you're 800% more likely to die from accidental electrocution than from a terrorist attack. You're 600% more likely to die from hot weather than a terrorist attack. And by the way, these are Department of State reports. And looking worldwide, not on terrorism of U.S. citizens. So we're not That includes U.S. citizens in Afghanistan, Iraq, and other theaters of war. We're just not talking about in the United States. But if you want to talk about, you know, United States, you're 35,000 times and more likely to have a heart attack and die than a terrorist attack. And it goes on. So then where is the likely outcome? It's not from terrorism that we're going to die. Quote, the agency in charge of workplace safety, the U.S. Occupational and Safety and Health Administration, reports 4,609 workers were killed on the job in 2011 within the U.S. homeland. In other words, you're 271 times more likely to die from a workplace accident than terrorism. The CDC notes that 3,177 people died of nutritional deficiencies in 2011. You're 187 times more likely to starve to death in America than be killed by a terrorist attack. Well, okay. And there were 155 Americans killed by police officers in the United States last year. That means that you're more than 900% more likely to be killed by a law enforcement officer than by a terrorist. So, why have we given up all of our rights with the idea that somehow we're at this great risk? According to the Council on Foreign Relations, 33 U.S. citizens were killed worldwide from terrorism. There were 301,579,000 Americans living in 2008, so the risk of dying from terrorist attack was 9,130,785 to 1. So at some point, someone should get their head straight on this issue. It's one thing to be aware of what causes terrorism, how to address it, and it's another thing to have massive intrusion in our rights, to have massive redistribution of the little wealth that we do have at the federal, state, and local level for terrorist attacks when we have far more pressing things that are actually injuring and hurting us, killing us, and putting us in harm's way that we're not addressing because we do not have that unlimited amounts of money. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Have you with us, everyone? We'll be joined in about 7 or 8 minutes with Dr. Joel Fuhrman to talk about the power of healthy eating in preventing and reversing disease. I have two issues I'm going to get to, and I've just been joined by our senior executive producer in studio, Valerie. Hi, Valerie. What do you got?
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about the film festivals, and it looks like social activism is really on the rise by what's happening in the film festivals with your documentaries. You've been winning hundreds of documentaries for over the last 3 years for the films you've been doing, Death by Medicine, Knocking on the Devil's Door, The American Vets now, and War on Health, and now The Seeds of Death. But what I first wanted to mention was the latest award that's coming in. It's extremely prestigious. It's the World Fest Houston Award, which is one of the original international film festivals in North America. And you have won the special jury award, the Remy Award, which is the highest award for creative excellence. This comes before the platinum, the gold, the silver, the bronze Remy Awards. It is the highest distinction. And you have won it for all three documentaries, The War on Health, The FDA's Cult of Tyranny, Seeds of Death, Unveiling the Lies of GMOs, American Veterans, Discarded and Forgotten. And this is just a extremely prestigious, wonderful award to win, and congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate you bringing that to our attention. I sometimes get the notices when they come across, when someone lets us know we've won something. and were of our official finalist in competition. What this tells me is this, that right now, and probably for the foreseeable future, millions of Americans are interested in issues that historically they would have not considered essential to their well-being. Parents are concerned about vaccines, and you see what we're doing today. Even as we speak upstairs, we're filming in Chicago. They want to know the truth because everyone trusts their governmental agencies to do the right thing. They want to know that those planes flying overhead and dispersing those chemtrails are not toxic. They want to believe that the food they're eating and the GMOs in them are not going to imperil their health. They want to know that the environment they're working in and the chemicals they're exposed to are not going to cause cancers. That the hamburger, the hot dog, the french fries they're eating, that there's not some problem waiting. And then they find out that there's a negative on all that, and they've been lied to, manipulated. They've been commodified. That bothers them. So then frequently they then ask their legislators, why aren't you leading on this? And so if you live around New York City, you ask, is there a problem if the Indian Point nuclear facilities, crash down? Is there a problem? Would we be affected? Do you have a plan for us? And the politicians, more often than not, give them some form of false reassurance. We're studying it. Anytime someone says they're studying a problem, that's a code word for we're not going to do anything about it. We're going to delay and hope you forget about this. For 100 years, they were studying the impact of cigarette smoking on health. And for over 40 years, they dodged the bullet on asbestos. Couldn't be that bad. The government's own, ship workers were using it. Uranium mining, trailings of the Navajo Indians out west. We wouldn't expose our, workers in government-sponsored mines to uranium. Everywhere you look, where our institutions that we have historically trusted have betrayed us. All of them have betrayed us. And as a result, now when people, the Danny Schachters, or Michael Moore, or whoever it may be, Glenn Greenwald, whoever is doing an important documentary that 5 years ago nobody would have watched, nobody would have cared. Now we have a lot of interest on these issues. So this is the hour for social issues to be shown. Younger people in particular are waking up to this and saying, wow, I didn't know anything about this. And so that's why I believe that we're getting the feedback that we are. And we currently have 6 different important documentaries in production or post-production. Now, over the next 2 years, those will be released. So thank you for bringing that to our attention.
Good. Thank you, Gary.
We're still waiting on my guest. When we locate him, we will have him on. Now, 2 issues that concern me is how many times have you heard the idea that that we need to bring in skilled labor from other countries because we just don't have enough skilled labor in the United States. And hence, it's only for our betterment. This is from Ian Thompson, the A Register. Quote, skill shortages? What skill shortages? U.S. companies use overseas workers to cut wages. Quote, an extensive study of the U.S. labor market has shown that the skill shortage, which technological firms are constantly complaining about, is overstated, and firms may instead be using overseas workers to drive down wage cost. In a paper for the Economic Policy Institute, Rutgers University's Professor Saltzman and Kuhn, and others from Georgetown University studied the market for science, technology, engineering, and math careers and found that there is no shortage in the United States. Well, then why is it up to 50% of new hires are foreign workers? And here's what it means in lay language. Let's say that you've done your homework. You went to college. You got an advanced degree. You have $150,000 in loans, and you've been working for 10 years in the field, and you're making $100,000 a year or $125,000 a year. And now your company brings in a person that you train who has an equally good degree and is knowledgeable, but they're willing to work for $50,000 a year and no benefits. You train them, then you're replaced. And this is happening constantly in the United States. This is from Dr. Paul Craig Roberts from Global Research. It's called The Offshore Outsourcing of American Jobs, A Greater Threat Than Terrorism. Quote, is offshore outsourcing good or harmful for America? To convince Americans of outsourcing's benefits, corporate outsourcers sponsor misleading one-sided studies. Only a small handful of people have looked objectively at the issue. These few, and the large number of Americans whose careers have been destroyed by outsourcing, have a different view of outsourcing's impact. So far, there has been no debate, just a shouting down of skeptics as protectionists. The authors of a major report on this note that despite the enormity of the stakes for all Americans, a state of denial exists among policymakers and outsourcing corporate champions about the adverse effects on the U.S. In what might be an underestimate, a University of California study concludes that, quote, listen to this, 14 million white-collar jobs are vulnerable to being outsourced offshore. Now, these are not only call center operators, customer service, or back office jobs. We're talking about IT, accounting, CPA, architecture, advanced engineering design, news reporting, stock analysis, and medical and legal services. The authors note that these 14 million jobs would frequently be thought of as the American dream. The jobs of upward mobile individuals generate the bulk of tax revenues that fund our education, health, and infrastructure and social security systems. And so corporate America's short-term mentality stemming from bonuses tied to quarterly results is causing U.S. companies to lose not only their best employees, their human capital, but also the consumers who buy their products. Employees displaced by foreign workers and left unemployed or in lower paid work have a reduced presence in the consumer market, pay less taxes. They provide fewer retirement savings for new investment. Non-think economists assume that new, better jobs are on the way. Now listen to this, quote, but no economist can identify these newer, better jobs on the way. The authors point out that, quote, the track record for the re-employment of displaced U.S. workers is abysmal. The Department of Labor reports that more than one in three workers who are displaced remains unemployed, and many of those who are lucky enough to find jobs take major pay cuts. Many former manufacturing workers who were displaced a decade ago because of manufacturing then went offshore, took training courses, and found jobs in the information technology sector. They are now facing the inevitable situation of having their second career disappear overseas, end quote. So American economists are so inattentive to outsourcing's perils that they fail to realize that the same incentive that leads to the outsourcing of one tradable good or service holds for all tradable goods and services. In the 21st century, the U.S. economy has only been able to create jobs in non-tradable domestic services. That's the hallmark of a third world labor force. Prior to the advent of offshore outsourcing, U.S. employees were shielded against low-paid foreign labor, and now they're not. The result is a lose-lose situation for American employees, American businesses, and the American government. Outsourcing has brought about record unemployment in engineering fields, a major drop in university enrollments in technical and scientific disciplines, and for a simple reason. Let's say that you're a highly motivated, very disciplined, very intelligent person from China or South Korea and or Taiwan or India. You can get into the United States on an H-1B or an L-1 visa. And that means you can live here. You can work here. But you'll be working for one-half to one-third of what an American-trained person would get. So the corporations are fully aware of this. They know what's going on. So they simply make out a deal. You want to bring down the cost of merchandise sold, get rid of the high expense labor. But this IT person, we got 1,000 IT people that we can give you out of China. And suddenly a person thinks, you mean I could shrink my payroll by 20% and show that as savings? And then, yes. And that's what's happened to the United States. And that is not being discussed. Oh, and to add one other thing into it, if you think the President of the United States and you think Congress care about you, think again. This is from Trent Novak, quote, beginning July 1st, the interest rates on subsidized Stafford loans for college undergraduates are expected to double from 3.4 to 6.8%. The increase in the interest rate will disproportionately affect those students who are most in need of assistance and occurs alongside other factors saddling young people with a vast amount of debt, such as rising tuition costs and increasingly bleak employment prospects after graduation. Subsidized Stafford loans are a special type of federal loan in which the government pays the interest while the student is in school. Eligibility is based upon need. But now they're going to double it? So let's get this straight. The United States government makes up to 30 cents out of every dollar on every student loan it gives. So now you're going to print money that costs you nothing, and you're going to take a 3.3%, and you're going to double it over 6.5% interest in a marketplace where over 50% of all graduates either are underemployed or unemployed, and then you're not going to allow them to just get out of that on any bankruptcy, and now you're fueling at the same time for private jails and debtors' prisons in 27 states. So if you can't pay your college loan or the interest on the loan, you could be arrested and put in jail. Yeah. Why isn't there a national strike? Why isn't there any solidarity by students? Why aren't they even conscious of this? What happened to all the vitalism in showing that they care about the world they're entering? Welcome to the new reality. So you've got millions of college kids who are going to be affected, who will not be able to pay interest and put themselves at great risk and can't get out of the debt, and that they're not fighting it. Okay, your thoughts on this? We'll have to reschedule my guest because we couldn't locate him. He wasn't on the number, so we'll get Dr. Furman on another show. 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. That's our talkback line. I'd like to hear your position on this. And while you're calling in, let's go over and say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. I got a very interesting email from one of your listeners, and I found it very curious. I was unaware of this. You may be aware of it, but there was a this Dr. Feelgood was around in the 50s and 60s, and apparently, I mean, this could really have changed history. He was giving this special vitamin that he made up, which was actually methamphetamines, to the likes of people like John F. Kennedy, Marilyn Monroe, and, a number of other people, real celebrities that affected their behavior, their decisions, even Jackie Kennedy, Mickey Mantle, Eddie Fisher, Truman Capote. Very, very disturbing to read about this. And it was a combination of what he called, he experimented on animals, patients, and himself, and he kind of combined vitamins, enzymes, animal placentas, and some hormones, as well as the methamphetamines. And I wondered if you were, A, aware of this, and B, what your feeling was. In fact, he also was selling this stuff to Rod Sterling, who was and he was apparently high on this methamphetamine when he wrote the Twilight Zone series.
Understand, which, here's what it means. Understand that today we see how seriously the emotionally disturbed a person who is high on meth is. And any form of methamphetamine, any form of high-level amphetamine is going to cause a hyper rush. I was fully aware of who he was. I was fully aware of the patients he saw because many of them I counseled. And getting people off those stimulants, high-level stimulants, sometimes people would have the stimulants 3, 4, 5 times a day, and people then began to get the idea that they could think better, think faster, be more creative if they had these. Nothing could be further from the truth. And when he died, the source of a lot of that dried up. But a whole lot of celebrities and lesser, well-known people were using his formulas.
Even Hitler, by the way.
Yep. It was a lot of people function on those type of amphetamines. And it's unfortunate. Like today, a lot of people function on methamphetamine and cocaine. If you were to go right now down to Wall Street, you'd find in almost every office building a gazillion people using cocaine because they work long hours, they're under a lot of stress, they want to be at the top of their game, and they feel gives them an advantage. They're not looking at the downside, and they don't think they're addicted. They are, and there's a big downside. Thank you.
I guess what's concerning is that we look at these people as role models. We look at these people as these positive forces. Even people like Leonard Bernstein, Tennessee Williams, Ingrid Bergman, Bob Fosse, they're all on the list. Nelson Rockefeller and Anai Nin, of all people.
Let me give you an idea. I was given a call a couple of years ago to come to a retreat where financial planners wanted to know about what the world of health would be looking like. And normally I wouldn't go, but a friend of mine was one of the attendees. And he said, you'd find these people interesting, Gary, especially this one Buddhist teacher. So out of curiosity, I was lecturing in Las Vegas at an anti-aging conference, presenting some information. So the next morning I flew out, and it was in the Bahamas on a private island. And there were 22 men who managed hundreds of billions of dollars of other people's money. One managed all the Russian oligarchs' money. Another was involved with the Vatican. Another, the Japanese business people, of the top people. And I had a chance. I spent about 6 to 8 hours giving them input, answering their questions, which they were very appreciative. And the food stunk, so I went ahead and went in the kitchen. I asked the owner of the place, let me just make a meal for everyone because this stuff is just dreck. So he said, fine. So I went ahead and made this great gourmet vegetarian meal. And then I had a chance to spend the evening, and we were literally up all night talking. And what I came away with was one of them was a really interesting fella, very grounded, very spiritual. But all the rest were so lacking in knowledge of the world we live in dealing with people, and the people whose money they managed. You would hear these horror stories about these people. And so what it comes down to, and I said this to the man from Japan, this money manager, I said, you aware how lacking in spiritual value any of this is? And he said, you're correct. He said, we never question how people make their money, only how they spend it. And he said, it's not about who has the most money. It's giving the impression that they have enough money that no matter what they want, they can buy. And he said, it's unfortunate, but he said, that's the way it works. And I once was counseling a very famous American classical actor and got him off the booze and I said, now you can go back home and have a quality of life. And he said, no, I can't. I said, why not? He said, Gary, everyone where I live expects me to have every word perfectly articulated. They want my wife to look beautiful all the time. They only want to see us as they visualize us in movies. They don't realize that I'm as inarticulate as anyone else. I spend my mornings like everyone else. I'm not special. And everyone else around me is not special. All of my friends who are famous in Hollywood and in England, none are special. They're just famous. And they have the same normal, you know, lives as anyone else. But people don't want to think that you're like them. And he said, that's why so many rich and famous people, and they want to congregate only with people just like them so they can all hide their imperfections. And that's what famous people do. Behind their money and their titles and their gated walls and behind their layer upon layer of special assistance to the president and behind all those desks before you get to the corporate desk, all of that is to prevent people from seeing just how plain and how human a person of power is. Because if you saw how normal they are, then you'd think, well, you're not that much better than me. And the reality is, they're not. But we want them to be. We'd like to think that the President of the United States is smarter. He's not. I don't know. Anyone who wanted to serve the public would be a better president than any president we've had since FDR. That's how it works. So everything else is simply the illusion that we create. Making your fame, your fortune, and maintaining power is the easiest part of life. When you're motivated, maintaining it is the hard part. Having people see you as something better than them, graced, blessed, unique, gifted, is all an illusion. And that's unfortunate. But that's the way our system is. And that's why so many people were hooked on the methamphetamines and are today. They don't want to be just normal. Normal no longer gets someone's attention. Thanks for your call. We're out of time. Let's say hello to Scott from New York City. I'll take one more Scott. And Peter from Scott, your turn. Make it quick because we're out of time.
Hello, Gary. This week on the Progressive Commentary Hour, you were speaking about journalism, and you mentioned Jeremy Scahill, and I just wanted to know if you could elaborate on why he wouldn't be included in kind of like the journalism that we want to look for in today's media.
I wouldn't suggest that he would be excluded. I simply challenged The Nation magazine for endorsing Obama and endorsing Clinton and being corporate Democrat and corporate liberal. It was not a challenge to Scahill. He does some outstanding reporting.
Oh, great. Okay, well, that's answered my question. Thank you very
okay.
much.
Good. And let's say hello to Alvaro from Flushing. Alvaro, your turn.
Hello, Gary.
Yes.
I just want to mention briefly that April 19th, a news item says MIT drills into the manufacturing skills shortage and finds that it doesn't really exist.
I dealt with that today. I said we don't have manufacturing we don't have manufacturing skill shortages. We don't have any shortages.
But I think you talk about IT, but even manufacturing at the factory floor, there's no shortage. And actually, most jobs in manufacturing only require a year after high school. Doesn't require a bachelor's degree. And very few require, like, a computer and writing and, you know, advanced math skills.
Yes. So, I appreciate your input. It just reinforces what I was saying. That we have been misled on all levels. Let's say hello to Utrecht Lead. Hi, Utrecht.
Hello, Gary. How are you today?
Doing great.
Great. Today we're talking about living with Osama bin Laden's ghost. Today is 2 years since the president announced Al-Qaeda kind of dead.
Do you believe that it was Osama bin Laden who was killed that day?
You know, I'm just waiting to see the definitive proof, but I still don't know. I still don't commit to a yes or a no. I just don't know.
I look at it a little differently. knowing that he had a terminal kidney disease and that he had to be on special dialysis, and that we and one of the WikiLeaks cables, it was talking about how he was being monitored in a hospital that had been provided by CIA assets. And that was back before 9/11. So my question is, how does a person get dialysis that is needed, state of health kidney care, for all those years in the trains that he was in Bora Bora? That is a question I would like to have answered, so that at least it could give some confidence they didn't once again give us the story they want us to believe rather than a story that needs to be told.
Mm-hmm.
We'll look forward to your program. Eutrice Lead right now.
Day after day I'm more confused, yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. You know that's a game that I hate to lose, and I'm feeling the strain. Ain't it a shame? Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I'm worried.